Good morning. Welcome to the half-year results for Go Ahead for a half-year ending 26th December 2015, and I will just pause to allow some people to find some seats. Okay. So our overall results are in line with management expectations, and our full-year expectations remain unchanged. Bus adjusted profit is up 1.5% to 47.8 million. Regional bus adjusted operating profit up 7% to 26.1 million, and revenue growth of 2.6% from contract gains and largely consistent year-on-year passenger numbers, which we're pleased about. London bus adjusted operating profit down 4.4% to 21.7 million. Roadworks and congestion, which lead to the decline in Quick's bonuses. Rail is adjusted operating profit at 32.9 million, margin of 2.6%, and our contribution to the government has gone up by 18.4 million to 126.6 million, which is a significant contribution. We're working very hard with Network Rail to minimize disruption to rail passengers during the 6.5 billion pound Thames Link program. As normal, we say it every time, and I'm pleased that we are consistent. We've got strong cash flow, robust balance sheet, and we have a proposed interim dividend increased by 6.5%. Those are our highlights. I'll pass over to Paul, who most of you know and is actually our interim finance director at the moment. He'll take you through the numbers. I'll come back and put some more color on that, and then we'll have a Q&A at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As is the normal format for this part of the presentation, I'll take you through an overview of the operating profit for the period, a look at the divisional trends, and then an overview of the income statement, the cash flow, and the balance sheet. Starting with our overall operating profit, we're showing here side by side the statutory operating profit and an adjusted operating profit. We said back in December 2015 that we were going to refer to an adjusted operating profit to give a clearer understanding of the underlying trading of the business. This adds back the incremental impact of IAS 19, which is a pension standard that requires us to account for costs associated with long-term liabilities in rail pensions. These liabilities extend far beyond the end of our current franchise and also create a pension charge that does not reflect the cash contributions of the pension scheme that are payable by the group. Just looking at the statutory column to start with, this fully absorbs a 19.1 million IAS 19 cost for the half year, which in itself is 7 million ahead of the previous year. As I say, distorting the results somewhat. Looking at the adjusted operating profit in regional bus, we're 1.7 million ahead at 26.1 million pounds. That's a 7% increase. As David has said, London bus is marginally down, 1 million down or 4.4% to 21.7 million pounds. Overall in bus, an operating profit of 47.8 million pounds, 1.5% ahead. Rail is ahead at 32.9 million pounds for the period, which takes our total operating profit to 80.7 million pounds, which is 19.7% ahead of the previous period. This gives us an operating margin of 4.8%, which itself is a half of 1% ahead. These are all in line with management's expectations. If we take a look at regional bus, first thing to note is that revenues in regional bus are up by 2.6% in the period. This is partly driven by contract work that we've won in the period and partly by fare increases, albeit those fare increases are broadly in line with inflation. Our commercial revenues have been stronger than concessionary revenues, which are broadly flat in this period year-on-year. It's worth a reminder that when we reported Q1 revenues, we reported revenue growth at 1%, so achieving 2.6% overall for the half year shows a Q2 strength in that revenue growth is over 4%. There's a similar pattern to passenger journeys. Our Q2 passenger journeys are up by 0.5%, whereas in Q1 we reported a slight decline of 1.5%. The mileage has increased in the period. This is up around about 1%, and this primarily reflects the additional contract work that we've undertaken in the period. Looking ahead, we expect our full-year growth figures to be in line with our half-year figures that we're reporting here. Moving on to the adjusted operating profit bridge. It's a relatively straightforward bridge. Revenue in the period is up by 4.2 million, and offsetting this, we have additional contract work and mileage, which brings with it additional operating costs. Included in that cost bus base increase, we also include inflationary increases in wages and engineering spend. Fuel is a benefit in the period of 900,000, and this is a hedge price improvement from 48.5 pence to 45.4. In regional bus, insurance costs are broadly flat, and the final point to note on this bridge is that in bidding costs, we've incurred 300,000 this year, bidding for the successful Loyang contract, which we start in September, compared to 500,000 that we spent on bidding in the previous year, so a 200,000 pound differential. This leaves us with an operating profit of 26.1 million, which is a margin improvement from 13.5%-14%. Moving into London Bus, revenues are again up on the previous period, 3.7%. This is principally contract wins, but it's also contract variations that have been put in place to address reliability measures in London. There's also rail replacement work in here. It's worth noting that Quicks is down 4.4 million, and we receive that as part of our revenue. Had Quicks been at a similar level to the previous year, our revenue growth would actually have been 5.7%. But looking at that 3.7% that we're reporting, this is again stronger than Q1, where we reported 2.5%. So again, Q2 growth is over 4%. Our mileage operated is up by 2.3%, and this is driven by all of the same factors that are driving revenues. Again, our full-year growth expectations are in line with these half-year numbers. So looking at London's profit bridge, again, it's a relatively straightforward bridge. The underlying revenue growth is 12.8% ahead, and this has outstripped the cost increases, and this is primarily just through our ongoing cost control programs. The principal impacts on profits, as we said, Quicks are down by 4.4 million, but also we have insurance costs of 1.3 million in excess of the prior period, and this is a number of high-cost claims that have incurred in the first half. Offsetting this, we have a similar benefit in fuel, with the fuel hedge price being the same as we saw in regional bus. So obviously, margins are impacted by all of the above, and margins have fallen in London bus from 9.9% to 9.1% in the period. So an overview of fuel. As we've seen, there's been some benefits year to date. We've had 1.8 million in the first half. Cost benefit in this year is around about 4 million compared to 2005. Actually, the key benefit in fuel comes through in 2017, where we have a tailwind of approximately 12 million, and that will help us control the overall cost base of the bus businesses. It's worth noting that we've pushed our fuel hedge policy out for 100% of financial years 2017 and 2018, and we also now include 40% and 20% of financial years 2019 and 2020, respectively. I think the final point to note on fuel is that the government spending review has left BSOG unchanged until at least 2020. So that takes us on to the rail division. Rail revenues, on average across the three TOCs, are up by 6.5%, and passenger journeys are up by 5.3%. Looking at the individual revenues, South Eastern is up by 6.1%, and this is similar to the run rate that we saw in the second half of 2015. This is on the back of 3.6% passenger journey growth. London Midland revenues are ahead by more, 9.6%. There's a higher yield on London revenue compared to the 4.7% journey growth, and that reflects the increase in demand on our London routes, which have a higher average fare. The revenue and journey growth are both actually partly reflect weaker comparatives, which followed the Watford blockade in the prior year, and also the fact that there's more use of New Street Station now that its renovation works are complete. GTR revenue growths are very similar to LSER in that they follow the trend of the second half of 2015. It's worth noting that their lower journey growth numbers actually reflect adjustments that we've made to travel card allocations and Freedom Passes to bring that franchise in line with the rest of the group. Moving on to the profit bridge for rail, this is a somewhat more complex profit bridge, and it reflects the change in structure of franchises that we've seen over the course of this half year compared to last. This is the full first half year of GTR, where it's combined Thameslink, Great Northern, and Southern. In the prior period, we only had 3 months of the Thameslink and Great Northern parts of the franchise. This gives a reflection in the revenue growth in the period. Offsetting this, we have more remittance to DfT because, again, we have a full period of paying over that passenger revenue to DfT compared to only 3 months last year. In Southern, the franchise finished in June 2015, so we no longer pay the Southern premiums that we were paying in H1 last year, as all these numbers are now interspersed with the GTR calculations, as are the Southern revenue support numbers. In South Eastern, we removed into a DAC halfway through the first half of last year, so this year we have a full franchise support, whereas last year we were in sorry, this year we have a full franchise subsidy, where last year we were receiving revenue support. Our profit share to DFT has increased by 8.4 million. There's a lot of franchise changes in there, but it's worth noting that our payments to DFT have increased by 18.4 million to 126.6 million. The final point on this profit bridge is regard to London Midland. Last year, we impaired some car park assets where we were unsure of the net market value we'd be able to achieve for them at the end of the franchise. Under the new DAC, we've agreed a value for those with the DFT, so we've written back an impairment that we provided last year. That gives us a benefit into this period of 3 million and a 5.9 million reversal overall. This takes our operating profit for the period to 32.9 million, an improvement in margin from 1.7% to 2.6%. Our full-year expectations for rail profit remain unchanged, although it is worth noting that we're likely to achieve our expectations from a profit bias that is more towards South Eastern and London Midland than it is from GTR. Moving on to the income statement. Revenues are up by 6.4%, as we've seen. This is principally in rail. Our operating profit is in line with expectations. Our net finance costs are reduced through increased income, which is receivable on the higher cash balances that we're holding. Amortization is lower, and this reflects the fact that we're moving towards the end of rail franchises and therefore have lower rail intangibles. This leaves us an adjusted net profit before tax of 71.9 million, which is up 14.9 million on the previous year. Looking at tax, our headline rate here is 15%. This reflects the effect of deferred tax on corporation tax rates reducing from 20% to 18%, and without this 3 million pound benefit, our tax rate would be 21%, which is 1% over our statutory rates. Profit attributable to members is up 10.7 million, or 28%, and our adjusted EPS is up 24.8% to 116.8. Our proposed interim dividend is 28.33, and this is an increase of 6.5%. Moving to cash flow analysis, start with the main cash inflow, which is, of course, EBITDA. Add to this, we have positive working capital, and this reflects mainly timing in respect of rail, which is season ticket monies and amounts payable to and from DFT and Network Rail. Cash flow from operations is 143.8 million. Last year, it's worth noting that this was over 250 million, but the principal difference between the two is that 250 million mainly reflected cash coming into the business on the inception of the GTR franchise. This leaves us, as I say, cash flow from operations. From this, we've paid our normal installments on tax due for this year and bond interest, which peaks in September of each year when we pay the interest on the bond. Our net capital expenditure is 58 million. This is split 52 million in bus, 32 million of that is in London, 10 million of which is on new depots, 20 million, the remainder is in regional bus, where we continue to invest in our fleet. Rail CapEx is lower at 6.4 million, and this mainly reflects areas like gating and TVMs. Moving on to our balance sheet, our adjusted net debt to EBITDA is 1.42 times. This is on a statutory basis, as this is required, as this is how it is required by our bank covenant. Were we to do this on an adjusted EBITDA basis, i.e., adding back IAS 19 revised, our operating profit would reduce to 1.24 times rather than 1.42. Our total cash holdings at the half year are 621 million. This is primarily held in rail. Offsetting this, we have debt from our bond and our RCF, leaving us net cash of 313 million. When you take away the restricted cash elements, this leaves us with a net debt of 260 million, which is marginally up from last year. Our full-year anticipation for cash will be that our cash balances will reduce from 313 million to around 200 million, and our net debt should stay at around 250 million, primarily because the reduction in cash is movements in working capital in the GTR franchise and therefore affects the restricted cash by an equal and opposite measure. Finally, looking at bus pensions, it's worth noting that our bus deficit, bus pension deficit of 59 million is very similar to the period this time last year. However, it is a 30 million difference from the June period, primarily caused by a reduction in assets, which is a reduction in market value of shares held within the pension scheme and other investments, but also an increase in liabilities where a reduction in discount rates applied increases the liabilities in the scheme. It's worth noting, as ever, that our rail pension scheme deficit is recognized on our balance sheet at nil because those liabilities remain with DFT. With that, I'll pass you back to David. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Right. We'll start off with regional bus. Adjusted operating profit up 7%, margins improving to 14%, and that's actually the highest we've ever delivered. When we started the £100 million journey in 2012, our margins were at 10%. And I'm also pleased to say that we believe this profit growth has been achieved sustainably. Revenue growth driven by higher contract income, which we've spoken about before, but they're generally National Express contracts, park and ride contracts, and our fares have been increased in line with inflation. Very pleased with our highest customer satisfaction score in the UK amongst the large groups, and that's at 90%. Our passenger volumes remain steady. A strong Q2, as Paul has already described, although we've still got economic weaknesses in the North East, where unemployment is still the highest in the UK and it's about 3% above the average. Consequently, there's less discretionary travel that takes place to go to the shops, etc. Continued investment. We invest in our product. So we've got spent £38 million on 179 buses, half of which have been environmentally friendly hybrids. Pingit and PayPal, we carry on doing everything we can to make life easier for our customers and methods of payments. So we do that through the apps and the PayPal, for instance, all where it's available, quarter of all payments on the app go through PayPal at the moment. It's taken off quite considerably. Continue to improve real-time information, more Wi-Fi, more USB points, more audio-visual, all the things that will attract and retain our customers. We've completed the Smart Zone. This is a multi-operator ticketing scheme in the Northeast, giving passengers more choice and more flexibility. And next we'll be looking at contactless travel and how do we introduce and implement that. And again, as we've already said, the government spending review has confirmed that BSOG is protected at least until 2020-21. Now, no discussion about regional bus would be complete without a reference to the political dimension. So the first thing to say is that the Independent Quality Contract Scheme has found the Tyne and Wear's QCS proposals to have failed to meet the necessary statutory public interest tests. Frankly, I would say this, of course, but anyone who has actually attended the hearings or read any of the reports could not have failed to have come to the same conclusion. And next up, we have the Chancellor's devolution agenda, which is the buses bill, which will be an enabling bill, is what we're led to believe. It will not impose any particular arrangements on local authorities or on bus operators. The decision to take up the new powers will be entirely for the local areas to decide. There will not be a one-size-fits-all approach. That's been made very clear to us in terms of what will be in the bill. But in terms of accountability, what we want still and what we've been putting pressure on the DfT over is we want some kind of Treasury-style, Green Book-style tests, and we want political accountability in there, so the political accountability in the shape of a mayor. Any structural reform needs to be economically sustainable, embrace private sector innovation. The local authorities or the PTs cannot assume that the market will stay as is. They will need to be agile and nimble. They need to actually have access to private capital. And in fact, who does all this? The private sector does this. They need the private sector to deliver on all these issues and more. So we still believe about in partnership working. We've always conducted our business in that way. We're set up to work that way. So we have a devolved management structure which enables them to have greater local accountability with the local political structures. And we don't see, apart from in Tyne and Wear, which is some unique circumstances, that there is a large appetite for change in the areas that we operate in. We provide high quality bus services, we have very high customer satisfaction, we are at no cost to local taxpayer, and we deliver, say for instance in Brighton, the local authorities' policies. So if you want a low emission zone, we're the guys that deliver it for you. At the end of all that, you say, what is there not to like? So go ahead is part of the solution. We believe that partnership working between private operators, the public and private sectors, is entirely the right way forward. Turning to London Bus. We are the largest bus operator in London, operating 24% of all the services, and that's on an expanding network. So we've retained that position. As someone said on the way here today, they experienced the roadworks and congestion. They carry on and they're impacting our quality incentive contract revenue. Quicks, as we call it, was never intended to penalise the operator for congestion. But a combination of cycle superhighways, regeneration work, public realm work, Elephant and Castle still carries on, for instance, and disappointingly, and I looked over my notes, I referred to that a year ago and it's still ongoing, have disproportionately affected us because we operate predominantly in central London and southeast London, and that's where been a lot of the roadworks and congestion has taken place. To the extent that we run the iconic Route 11 through central London, and that route at the moment has an average speed of 4 miles per hour. People can actually walk faster than that. And our Route 1, which comes up from southeast London, is a new schedule, but we're actually losing 25% of traffic loss mileage on that schedule. That is a really difficult position to be in. If you bear in mind that outside of London, if you're losing 0.5%, you would be very upset. So we can't operate an attractive service in such circumstances. And in the last reported quarter, TfL saw a drop in patronage of 6.6 million passengers. And they are reporting that they think the full year will be a 19 million passenger drop overall. So we believe, and TfL believe, they're committed to improving EWT, to the excess waiting time, and they're committed to find ways of actually getting around these congestion issues. So there's been more resources put into the routes. They can be either in time, buses or people. And they've introduced other ways of actually incentivising the operator within the Quicks contract regime. So we are a high-quality, cost-efficient operator. We have a very experienced management team. We've got high contract retention rate. And put all those things together, even with the issues of Quicks and the decline in those bonuses, our underlying profitability of the business continues to improve. And what we've also done, and I said this, we were looking at it at the full year, but we have now completed the investment and bought two freehold properties in growing parts of London. So where one of them is, for instance, is embarking in East London. And if you're actually going to grow the population and actually provide the housing, which all the mayors are talking about at the moment, the only real place you can do some of this is in East London in the borough of Barking. So we bought a freehold property in there, which positions us really well for the growth in bus demand, because there's very little rail infrastructure in that area. And in the medium long term, there is population growth is going to drive bus demand. We can expect a further 200 million passenger journeys by 2021. TfL is still growing the network. They've got the plans for 500 additional buses, and they need to do that to match the annual rise in bus trips. Turning to rail. So as a general overview, Southern and Gatwick Express has been integrated into GTR. That sounds very simple in one sentence, but actually that is an incredibly difficult job to have done with the numbers of staff, 7,000 odd staff, all the IT issues that go with it and all the organisational structures that go with it. We've been awarded the direct award contract to London Midland, which involves a 13 million package of improvements. And our net contributions to the DfT, we've said this about three times now, are up to 126.6 million. This is a good deal for taxpayers. Our core focus remains on delivering the commitments of our existing franchises for our passengers and for DfT. And we're working hard with Network Rail to minimise the disruption, all as a consequence of the Thames Link programme. And we bid for Transport for London's overground network, and we're awaiting the outcome of that bid. That's a process we're going through. And we still believe the UK market offers significant opportunities going forward. Breaking it down to individual franchises, Southeastern, under its direct award contract, is delivering a really strong trade performance and is in profit share with the DfT, and it's contributed 14.7 million under that scheme. And we're challenging Network Rail, I have to say that. It's a complex network that you operate on, and we're running more services with more people than ever before, but there's really limited resilience in that network, and it's been compounded by the capacity restrictions on London Bridge, which affect Southeastern and Southern and all trains that go through the London Bridge area. So Network Rail are working hard to improve their asset maintenance, and on a constrained network, what happens is if you get a primary delay, the secondary delay associated with it is considerable. And what our line is at the moment, we have to be absolutely at the best you can possibly be across all partners to actually maintain a viable railway on such a constrained network. In London Midland, we've been awarded the franchise under a direct award till October 2017. It's a load of deliverables we've got within that, additional seats, free Wi-Fi on certain services, extra car. There's a whole list of things that we're going through and working on. And what I'm pleased about is their performance will continue to improve throughout the year. Steady increase in passenger journeys and revenue. Large contribution for the finish of New Street Station, which is good. It's become a destination in its own right. And some of the best punctuality scores in the sector in the high 80s. And turning to GTR. So trying to convey that it's only took place in July that actually GTR was created. So it's a new business, new leadership team, new culture, programme of works with committed obligations. Whoops, let's go back. Programme of works for the committed obligations. And there has been disruption, calls through the infrastructure and other operational challenges through the course of the year. So since the beginning of the contract, GTR have been operating a timetable that's been different to our original bid assumptions on what the infrastructure could deliver. And therefore, that's ended up, as a consequence, we've provided a different level of performance. In very simple terms, if we're contracted, as we were, to provide 24 trains an hour into London Bridge, but the infrastructure and the capacity of that place can only allow you to do 20, there is a mismatch, and that affects the timetable. And we've been changing the timetable ever since to try to get it into balance. So an independent review has concluded that the network could not support the expected performance level through this period of major infrastructure renewal, and because there's a lack of resilience in the system. And as a consequence of that, the DfT have agreed there's an impact because of these changes and have amended the franchise accordingly. We continue to work with Network Rail, again, to minimise, I've said that before, but this is a growing railway. There's a growing demand on the railways in the southeast, 40% increase in passenger numbers, and that requires infrastructure investment. And of course, the problem is, as you're trying to, as they've got this growing demand, with an infrastructure investment to meet that growing demand, which is currently on a railway that hasn't changed for the last 100 years, you're going to create some inconvenience in the short term, and that's what's been going on. But in the long term, passengers will benefit from this. So GTR, we're delivering on those areas that we're responsible for. So 150 additional drivers have come in over the last year. We've got an academy for training train drivers of 270 people. It is the largest in Europe, certainly the largest in the UK, could possibly be the largest in the world, but don't quote me on that. But I'd like to see one that's bigger than 270 people being trained. The danger is, or the difficulty we have, is it takes 12 months to train a driver. And that's a long process we're going through. And also why we're training so many drivers is that we have to do so much training on the infrastructure, new signals, and new rolling stock that's coming in. And referring to the rolling stock, we've got additional rolling stock coming on track to be delivered during the course of the year. So we've got the Gatwick Express trains that will be starting at the end of this month and starting in March. We've got the new Thameslink 700 series. The first one will come in spring, and then it will be continually delivered all the way through till 2018. And we only this week signed an order with Siemens for 150 carriages on the Moorgate service. And those trains will be delivered through the course of this franchise. So all the things that we've been set out in our contract, we are delivering on and making progress on. So where does that leave us with regard to margins? This year we expect to break even on a statutory basis, and on an adjusted profit basis we expect to see a 1% margin. Over the long term, we expect our margin target to remain unchanged. Turning to overseas contract wins, we've been awarded a 5-year contract in Singapore at Loy Yang Depot. That begins in September 2016. $500,000 Singaporean dollars worth of business, 25 bus routes. It's got a critical mass, there's 400 buses there, very limited capex exposure. It's very similar features to the London bus market, which I've spoken about before. The revenue risk is taken by the government. We're enjoying working there at the moment. We're enjoying good relationships with the LTA, who are over visiting us this week. We've got a senior team already set up, comprising both UK and Singaporean staff. Mobilised very, very quickly. We've already taken over this depot. We've negotiated terms and conditions with the trade union. We've started recruiting drivers in China and Malaysia. So it's all systems go at the moment. In addition, we've been awarded two contracts to operate in Germany on rail services in Baden-Württemberg from June 2019. Expected total revenues of 1.6 billion euros. Gross cost contracts, again, limited exposure in terms of capex in comparison with some of the UK franchises, revenue growth and operational performance linked into incentive regimes. So finally, we do remain on course to meet our 4-year expectations for both bus and rail divisions. In bus, we anticipate steady progress towards our operating profit target of 100 million, and expect that to be achieved in 2016-17. If you review our adjusted operating profit, you can see how close we've come in this year to the 100 million target, which was actually set prior to the IAS 19. We continue to work hard to improve our customer proposition to drive revenues, while future fuel cost reductions will help manage our cost base. In rail, we expect continued strong performance in South Eastern and London Midland. In GTR, the network will benefit from new trains and more drivers, enabling improvements in customer experience, and we're delivering on those areas that we can control, as set out in the contract. As I've just said, the mobilization in Singapore is progressing really well and is in line with our bid assumptions. And how I normally end, unfortunately, it's exactly the same, as the group remains in a strong financial position, good cash generation, and a robust balance sheet supporting a dividend policy and allowing flexibility to pursue value-added opportunities. So thank you very much, and we can go into Q&A.
Good morning, it's Edward Stanford from Lazarus. A few questions, if I may. You talked about amendments to the GTR contract in the light of the available capacity. Are you able to elaborate a little bit more on how that's changed? Is that effectively a rebasing of the contract, or will you still be involved in continuous negotiations to obtain compensation for prior failings? Turning to bus, you talked a little bit about the political environment in the Northeast. There are some suggestions that the Nexus is contemplating quality partnerships. Could you perhaps give your take on that matter? And that's it. Thank you. Oh, sorry, no, one more, beg your pardon. Network Rail, and the proposed, well, the Shaw report, clearly we don't know what's in it, but do you have any views about how Go Ahead would perhaps fit into a more devolved environment for Network Rail?
Okay. I'll start with the last one first. Our frustration with Network Rail is that if we don't think they're delivering, we've got nowhere else to go. So any kind of devolved structure which allows greater comparison between the different areas, allows us to actually benchmark, we think is a good thing to do. We want Network Rail to be more customer-focused. So in terms of how we fit into that, is we want to be in good partnership with them. We want to have, we want to work with them to actually have them a successful business, because if they're successful, we're successful. We're in this together. But I certainly want greater exposure in terms of comparators between different devolved parts of Network Rail, and I want greater clarity over who's responsible in terms of those devolved structures. Yeah, I think that's all I need to... That's all right for that. In terms of the buses, it's ourselves who want to work in partnership. I think you'll find that, in terms of your words were quality partnership, I think you'll find that Nexus aren't saying those things. They wanted a quality contract scheme, and I think what they will now do is wait for what's going to come out of the buses bill. But they haven't talked about quality partnerships. And in terms of GTR, I mean, one of the key words you used there was the continuous process. It is a continuous process. This franchise is a huge, complex, and difficult one, and we are in a continual process of changes within that contract, which are recognized by the DfT, and it's an ongoing process. In fact, it's often recognized that from day one, it's already wrong, and you have to start looking at how you deal with that. So one of the big issues we've had from time... So there's been a whole plethora of different things been going on, whether dealing with rolling stock or dealing with mileage that we've operated that wasn't originally in the ITT or in our bid assumptions. Those things have been settled, but there are other things that will come along that we'll need to settle. And the big one, the big issue really, is about recognizing that London Bridge hasn't allowed us to operate the timetable that we were contractually given to operate. And the capacity constraints from that have now been recognized, so we won't be penalized for things that are outside of our control. It doesn't change in other areas that we have to manage. It doesn't change if we don't provide the right number of trains or don't produce the rolling stock. All those penalties, et cetera, will remain. But in the areas that, in terms of London Bridge, that were outside of our control, that's now been recognized. Thank you. Damien.
Damien Brewer, RBC. First of all, just a couple of qualification questions and then just some questions on the business. First of all, on GTR, the long-term margin aspiration, is that on the statutory or on the sort of super-adjusted margin basis? And equally, the 100 million bus aspiration, is that statutory on the new sort of super-adjusted basis? Then coming to the sort of operating business, on the regional bus, could you talk about a little bit more and elaborate a little bit more on the sort of regional variation in performance there? It sounds like a trend we're seeing across the industry. Are you also seeing sort of differentiation, for example, between the Northeast and some of the more southern businesses? And also, what sort of contingencies are you making if we do see areas like, for example, Cornwall go down the quality contract route? Patently, you have a depot just across the border there in Plymouth. Is that something you'd consider as being able to extend out from existing fixed cost bases? And I guess the final one, which is more sort of prosaic, UK Rail seems to be becoming increasingly capital intensive, big capex needed typically in the first 2 years of contracts, very significant contingent equity or contingent bonding requirements. How does that affect your appetite to think about rail in future? And how does that affect the way you're thinking about balance sheet structure vis-a-vis, you know, what the right kind of level of net debt is and what the right kind of dividend payout is if you're to pursue further rail contracts?
Okay. I'm not going to start with that last one first. I'll have to think about that one. In terms of regional variations, I can only talk about my business, and there are regional variations. As we said, with the Q2, we've actually had good passenger growth numbers. Some of that's on the back of roadworks finishing in Brighton and Oxford. Some of that's on the back of, you know, keeping that customer proposition going. So we're very pleased about that. The Northeast has suffered, and I've said that in the presentation, and passenger numbers are down because of the economy in the Northeast is our predominant reason we put behind that. So what do you change? What do you do differently? Some of it you don't do differently at all. You have to do all the same things and work harder at them. Some of it is about trying to fine-tune your service pattern in the Northeast that we might do more than in other places. Some of it is doing things faster. So we're looking to see if we introduced a contactless, would that actually be attractive enough to attract more people? And if we're going to do it, let's do it in the Northeast because we'll find out that way. So it's doing more stuff more often, but it's also about trying to make sure you're balancing your resources against the demand at the same time. But it is a concern because it hasn't really come out from the recession in actual fact. In terms of bus and the 100 million, that's on a statutory basis that we're looking at. And the point I was making that it's on an adjusted basis, we would have been all but damn it here, there, this year. But on a statutory basis is what we're looking for on 2016-17. And similarly with GTR, we're talking about it on a statutory basis and not an adjusted basis in terms of where we think we'll be on overall margins. It's an evolving picture again on UK Rail. It's a good question because I think it's going to change according to each different franchise. Each franchise changes over time anyway, according to the background of issues that are going on. And each franchise is different according to its different circumstances. So there's different, you know, long distance commuters, etc., etc. And this is a bit like a football club manager saying, "I'll take each match as it comes. I'll take each franchise as it comes, and I'll take a view on it in terms of what we think, how it positions itself within our existing portfolio, how it positions itself within our availability of funding, and availability of capex, and the availability of bonds." So we will literally do that on a franchise by franchise basis. But there are issues behind all of that as well, as you highlighted.
Just one of the areas to add to that as well is that we do have reasonable capacity in our ratings in order to be able to take on some more contingent liabilities if that was the right thing to do at the time. So that wouldn't have an immediate impact on us. And looking at how that puts pressure on the balance sheet, I think we are conscious that our low level of net debt is going to give some level of increasing pressure in terms of looking at dividends. And I think the board's always looking for ways to enhance shareholder value, and it's always conscious of that pressure. So that will be kept under continuous review.
It's James Hollins from Nomura. A few for me, please. The first one is on the London Quicks. Should we assume that stays at zero for the second half? And is there perhaps a scenario playing out where that goes negative, i.e. you're paying money to TfL? And the second one, just again, I guess a clarification on the GTR margin. If we're looking at break-even in full year 16, does that go to normal in full year 17, or is there a slow build-up to normality? And then finally, I was wondering if you had any views on Andrew Jones' speech last week, whether you're more or less bullish, whether that's clarified anything for you ahead of the buses bill. That's it for me, thanks.
Thank you. I wasn't actually there, but I read the I was there, but after you'd gone, I read the transcript. It confirmed more than, there were no surprises particularly in there. I mean, he quite clearly said the words I've said earlier, which is, it's not going to force it upon any particular local authority, that there'll be a range of options available, and that it'll be for local, you know, and if you would say this, if it's a part of a devolution agenda, then it's down to the devolved authorities to decide whether they want to do it or not. And he was very clear about it's not one size fits all. So we had confirmation of a lot of that. What we didn't have is the detail of how, for instance, a Treasury Green Book test would apply or not apply. And it wasn't absolutely clear about some of the accountability. One of the lines that we've been saying is that we are directly accountable to customers. And in London, to customers, the mayor is directly accountable to customers, because if they don't like what's happening, they'll vote the mayor out. You've got to have accountability somewhere. You cannot have a distance bureaucracy with customers. It just doesn't work that way. You've got to have direct accountability somewhere on the line. So there's still some things to come out from that buses bill. In terms of GTR margin, you answered your own question. It's a slow build-up. So that's what we would expect. It'd be a slow build-up over time. As we move through each of the stages of the Thames Link programme, as we get more stability to each platform, both literal stability to the network, and as we make progress with more rolling stock and more drivers, then that will allow the build-up, because performance improves, therefore the margin will improve. So it will be a slow build-up. And in terms of London Quicks, I mean, unfortunately, some individual routes are already negative. It's the overall pattern that we look at in terms of all the routes in London. It's a difficult one, because the official view is it will get easier from TfL. That's the official view. I think the second half is still going to be very difficult, personally. And we would expect that to be not making a lot of money out of Quicks in the second half.
Hi, it's Alex Patterson from Investec. Three questions, please. Firstly, just on the regional bus side, as you mentioned, in Brighton, the road development congestion has sort of eased. Has that, or can you quantify any impact on your bus volumes in the second quarter from that? And would it be reasonable to assume that when Oxford finishes, you'd get a similar uplift? Secondly, just on the change in the franchise, relating to the London Bridge problems for GTR, again, could you say what kind of margin impact that will have? And then finally, you know, cognizant of the potential capital requirements of further rail, but is there a level of net debt to EBITDA that you would think you could consider a return of capital to shareholders?
Okay. I'll start. You've got a second quarter number that you quoted from earlier.
Yes.
Did you mean overall or just for Brighton?
Yeah, so yeah. What did Brighton do for the overall?
I don't know, I've got that information.
No, it was amongst the stronger performance, but I don't have the absolute detail. No.
I haven't got the detail of that. But as Paul said, it was one of the stronger performers. And a lot of it was linked to roadworks that are in the centre of Brighton that went on for a considerable amount of time. And you can see all the indicators. I mean, it's a causal relationship between the reliability of the service and the number of customers you carry. And it works the same on rail and it works the same on bus. Our reliability had gone down, traffic loss mileage had gone up. That was caused through roadworks. The roadworks finished, reliability went up, customers went up. It was pretty good, and profits went up. We quite like that. In Oxford, it's a different story because there's an ongoing two-year programme of roadworks which are working sort of like clockwise around the city. But actually, the bigger issue in Oxford is the fact that their retail proposition is changing. So the Westgate Shopping Centre is now closed and doesn't reopen until 2017. So that's one of the issues that will affect Oxford going forward for a few years, as well as the roadworks. But we're managing that in a number of different ways within our bus business in Oxford. The change of the franchise in GTR, it's as I said, which is that we expect to break even on a statutory basis this year, 1% margin on a adjusted profit basis, and then a gradual build up back to our original target margins over the following years. That's what we expect to happen on GTR. Net debt EBITDA, do you want to do that?
I think, as we said, it's where do you look at what level of net debt to EBITDA, but you have to view that also in the context of what opportunities do we have that we might require that capital for. So you talk about potential acquisitions, potential investment in the fleet. So capital return to shareholders is one of those, is amongst those considerations, and as I say, it's kept under review by the board.
Thank you very much. Jolyon Wellington from JP Morgan. Can I ask three questions, please? Two on regional bus and one on rail and the GTR contract. Just on the bus side, regional bus, just in terms of your Q2 passenger growth, so that's the 3 months to December. That's versus other competitors who were talking about tougher weather and other bits and pieces of disruption. I just wondered why that was so much stronger. And then I guess linked to that, you've been talking about fuel benefits coming through, whereas I guess some of your competitors haven't really mentioned that. And you talked about there being a big tailwind next year as well. I just wondered, to what extent are you better equipped to retain those fuel benefits? And then the final question on GTR, just in terms of your 3%, is it 3% margin target? I just wondered what needs to go right for that to be possible. So I know there's some milestones in terms of delivery of that contract, and I guess to what extent does customer satisfaction need to improve for you to be able to get to that 3% margin? Thank you.
Okay. In terms of Q2 passenger growth, it does go back to roadworks have been finished, customers have come back, keeping the customer proposition going. We believe we provide high quality services. And the general growth is there. We have not experienced a weather effect, but then I don't operate in Carlisle, for instance, where there was flooding, or York, where there was flooding, for instance. So certainly Plymouth had a lot of rain, but actually it was okay. We carried on growing the passenger numbers in Q2, so we're quite pleased. So I think a lot of it is self-help. A lot of it is, if you get your services right, you grow your numbers. The fuel benefit tailwind, we almost think that's a given. We've hedged our fuel prices. It's in the bag, so to speak, and that will help mitigate any other cost increases that we've got over the next year. So we don't see that as being variable in any shape. And the GTR 3% profit margin, it almost all of the above. In the end, at each level, I mean, it's quite clear when the analysis has been done on the network and the capability of the network, every time capacity is taken out, this is such an obvious statement, every time capacity has been taken out of London Bridge, starting in August 2014, the performance has declined. And it's, I'd love to show you the graph, but I can, but it declines every single time. So then at the Christmas 2014, platforms have changed and we reduced the number of platform availability, performance declines. What we want to do is get the reverse back in. And as performance improves, then then customers are happier, but performance improves, therefore your penalty payments decline and you're actually they're in a better position to actually make profits from that. And we expect some of that to start happening during the course of the next two to three years, because performance will improve as new trains go on, because the capacity on the train improves. Next August, we don't get more... capacity at London Bridge, but you get more movement for passengers. And one of the issues with such a huge number of passengers arriving at London Bridge in the morning peak, it's 150,000 people, how do you get them off the train and on the train quick enough? And what happens in August is actually the amount of space in London Bridge will improve and escalators will be put in, so the movement of passengers gets better. That will help improve the flow but won't improve the capacity. So bit by bit and incrementally it is going to get better. You're right to identify some financial milestones which aren't baked in, but we hope to achieve, but we're very, very dependent on third parties still. And all of this, we're always dependent upon third parties. But we focus on what we can deliver, which is getting drivers in, training the drivers, getting the rolling stock in, getting it all prepared for service, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, okay, thank you. Over to your left.
Hello, this is Alexa Dugan from Goldman Sachs. I just had two questions, please. Just going back to the 2Q volume growth, and sorry to ask again another question, but I slightly struggle to understand that the December must have been a very strong month because your pre-close passenger volume was running at -1 for the first half and now it's -0.5. And I guess my question is, did contracts start in December, for instance, the park and ride and the coach, just to understand what is organic and inorganic perhaps? And then just my second question is on CapEx. This year you're guiding for around 85 to 95 million of CapEx. Should we expect that to be an ongoing rate going forward? Thanks.
Okay. I'm quite happy to talk about good news. It's a good question because actually some of it is linked to contracts, but not all of it. I'm just quickly going through my mind, when did some of them start? There was some contracts started around that period, but actually others were already in there. Maybe it's an element of getting up to steam, so to speak. It's partly about Christmas shopping, partly that comes in. There was no negative feel to the Christmas shopping. Sometimes that can work differently. So generally it was a combination of organic and inorganic, as you described. So, but I'm happy to keep talking about it because it's quite good news. CapEx, Paul?
I mean, in CapEx, to a certain degree, as you say, there's 20 million in fleet in London, and that depends on contract wins. So that can be hugely variable depending on contract renewals. In terms of the level that we've spent in the regional bus fleet, which is about 20 million this year, again, that's an ongoing programme of renewal to make sure that we're maintaining the average age of the fleet. So there's a core level, and then there's a variable element that relates to London contract wins.
Hi, good morning. Rashika Savjani from Barclays. Two remaining questions for me. The first one, just on your triennial review, have you had the outcome for that? And or is it still kind of due? And are you expecting any change to your cash contributions? And then the second one on rail and the proposals last month around kind of London and the South East. Do you have any initial thoughts or commentary around that? That would be very helpful. Thank you.
On pensions, the results of the triennial review aren't finalised yet, so we haven't concluded discussions with the trustees on the basis that we haven't seen those finalised results, but they are due soon. So I would guess by the time that we're reporting our full year numbers, we'll actually be in a position to be able to give fuller details on that.
And in terms of South East, you're talking about devolution of rail services. In some respects, we're quite agnostic. We love working for the Department for Transport, and we love working for Transport for London. And if we work for Transport for London for train services and bid for train services in the South East that TfL end up running, that would be absolutely fine. I'm just a contractor. I contract, and if I was to make a point, the structure doesn't really change, just the client. Because if TfL run the network, they will still have Network Rail maintaining the network. They'll still have all the issues of a constrained network with limited capacity and limited resilience. And they will be, I would assume, I can't believe they do it any other way, they will contract somebody to operate it for them. That's what the DfT do. I operate Southern on a gross cost basis on behalf of the DfT. And the DfT and Network Rail is a nationalised part of the DfT, and they provide the infrastructure. It doesn't really change anything. It just changes the client, is the way I see it. And we'll be bidding in 2018, if it stayed with DfT, we'd be bidding for work. If it goes to TfL, we'll still be bidding for work. We're a contractor. At the front, actually.
Hello, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC. A couple of questions. The first one on bus margins generally, as you were pointing out, Paul, they are at a record level now. Just wonder to what extent you expect that can continue, especially in light of pressure from local authorities. I know that you're operating in areas that aren't necessarily in the eye of the storm with respect to bus re-regulation, but nevertheless we've still had noises from other councils like Oxford where people are looking to or making threats. Secondly, on the GTR franchise, as you were saying, you are still very dependent on third-party mm-hmm. delivery. Just wondered to what extent you had baked in absolute sort of concrete guarantees around that third-party delivery and that we can therefore count on compensation from Network Rail if infrastructure isn't delivered to plan. Finally, just back on bus and on BSOG, I just wondered if there were any new strings attached to the allocation of BSOG now. And I know that it's been protected. I just wonder if it's become any more difficult to access.
Simple answer on BSOG, if there is, I haven't heard it. If they're planning it, I haven't heard it. So I don't know that answer to that at all yet. In terms of third party, it's a complicated picture. Nothing is straightforward in some of these issues about exactly where some of the liabilities would lie or not. So we haven't baked in the financial milestones into some of this because some of it is very unclear. But certainly in the end, the whole of the GTR is about partnership working. And we're dependent on other people, which is what I said before. I want Network Rail to be a huge success. I want Siemens to be a huge success because then that will make me successful. So the issues of how that passes through or flows through if someone doesn't deliver get very, very complicated. It would take a long time to discuss right now. And in terms of bus margins, we've said consistently that once we got to the margin that supports 100 million, you cannot expect that to be exponentially growing. I would like to think that local authorities say that since we don't pay you any money, since we've got a great bus service, since it's not of our responsibility, they shouldn't care, really. As long as the fares are good and customers are happy, why should they care what money we make, would be my view. But of course, sometimes people do take a different view. So I don't see those margins growing dramatically more than that once we hit the 100 million. And that's consistent. That's the message we've said all the way along.
But do you think it's sustainable at 14%?
I see no. I think that there's a point I made before. Our profits have been made sustainably. You know how to do things unsustainably. This has all been sustainable. This has all been still investing for the future. It's still taking views about new service provisions, which sometimes don't make money straight away. It's not cutting back to the core. It's still providing networks, because networks deliver what you need. If you cut back to the core, you've got no feeder services for your core routes. We're doing all the right things to manage properly and professionally bus networks across the UK where we operate.
And sorry, just one other question. In London, as you go through the cycle of contract renewals, mm-hmm. are you seeing any change to sort of to baseline prices to compensate yourselves for this removal of quicks, or do you anticipate them returning in any other form from TfL as contracts come up for renewal? I can't remember what percentage of your portfolio is up for renewal over the next couple of years.
Generally speaking, it's always about 20%, and it varies down to 17%. It would never normally get lower than 12% because of the volume we operate. It is a competitive market in London. It always has been. It's never not been competitive. There's always someone new entering the market who's more competitive than perhaps others are because they may not understand their cost base. The thing that changes, and I can say this with great certainty because I was on the other side of the fence once upon a time, is that when you come round to actually put in the performance objectives or performance targets within a contract, you're taking into account what that current performance looks like. So if the performance has been great, you make it even harder. If the performance hasn't been great and you understand the reasons are to do with congestion, then you will amend that target accordingly. So there'll be some slight, at this very precise moment in time, there'll be people in TfL slightly amending the EWT targets on an individual route basis. the advantage that London gives in terms of the way that it operates franchising is on a route by route basis. So as circumstances change, you're reassessing and realigning each individual contract that comes up for renewal on a regular basis. So you're regenerizing 20% of your network all the time in London. Gerald.
Gerald Koo from Liberum. Three questions for me. Firstly, on rail, you mentioned you're agnostic in terms of working for DfT or TfL. Clear difference, GTR aside, is the absence of revenue risk when working for TfL. Given the strong performance you've had out of South Eastern and London Midland with commercial arrangements, would that not disappoint you? Secondly, can you just clarify where you're on dividend policy? So interim dividend up 6.5% against EPS up, I think, 25. And finally, could you just clarify on working capital, how much you said you think is going to reverse in the second half, please?
I'll do them in reverse order. The expectation is that we'll have a reversal of around about 100 million in the second half. And that's primarily a cash flow that is DfT related, and it's primarily on GTR. And it's to do with the phasing of when we receive cash in from the DfT to run that franchise. So that we're fairly confident that will reverse. In terms of dividend policy, the 6.5% is a replication of how much we increased the 2015 final year dividend, and that in itself is the same that we did in the prior year, where we increased the interim dividend by 4.3% because we increased the full year 2014 by 4.3%. In terms of the policy on dividends, we've typically said that we'll look at dividends when our dividend cover is above 2x.
Two times cover on old IS19.
It's 2x cover, but it's unadjusted.
In terms of DfT, TfL, there are different types of contracts with different types of risks, different types of circumstances, with different types of prices you bid in. And we do make money out of TfL contracts. If we were to be successful, I'd hope to be making money out of a TfL contract. I'm very relaxed about it. Damon. You're allowed to.
Thank you. Can I just circle back on two things, one which you mentioned in the presentation? First of all, London Bus, Quick's down by 4.4 million, but obviously the EBIT down by much less. Could you tell us what you did there in terms of what gave you some relief, I assume, on the cost side, mm-hmm. to generate that quite impressive performance? And then secondly, on the regional bus, could you just give an update on where you are on sort of wages and other social benefits in terms of inflation there, and what's happened with the labour turnover rates? Are they static? Have they gone up, down, or what's changed? Thank you.
Okay. In terms of what's happening in London, with Quicks going down but still underlying performance looking good, that's partly, as I say, we've got a fantastically experienced management team there and understand what they can and can't do, and what they do in terms of performance and what they do in terms of costs. So they'll be going round the mill again for looking at cost savings and what they can do on there. And in terms of why there's some relief, partly it's because we've had new contracts which get regenerated in terms of more money coming in. Partly it's because we've had more resources. If we're the most affected by the Quicks problems and by roadworks and congestion, then we're the ones that have had the most amount of resource put back into the contracts. And what they're very good at, the management team, is if TfL have said, this is what we want in a Quicks 2 type scenario, or some change in variation to the contract, then they're very focused at understanding how to deliver it. And if they deliver it right, then their profits increase. So that would be my answer to that. In terms of region, we put our pay increases in, we don't take any holidays, we do all the right things, we do, so on average it's about 2% pay award across regions during the course of the year, on average. We do all the right things in terms of engagement surveys, in terms of how we treat our staff. We're going through a cultural change program at the moment because we've really focused on the fact that if our staff are customer centric, then that's the first port of call for a customer. So we've got to get our drivers more customer centric and do look at the retail proposition that we've got. Not to say they're not at the moment, but it's about improving that all the time. So So social benefits, it's all, you know, it's a difficult market always still to retain staff, but we don't have anything particular. There's no areas of concern. But it actually changes regionally anyway, because Oxford pays higher wages than lots of other places to represent the fact that it's almost a suburb of London sometimes. I'll be killed by any Oxford resident for saying that. But we actually, it's high wage rates because you're in competition with BMW. That's what happens. When people talk about fares, they're a reflection of the cost base that you're running at and a reflection of the area you're running.
And turnover rates are stable?
Turnover rates are stable. There's not an issue. But you have to work hard at it.
Morning, Jay Spina from Jefferies. When you talk about the 2x dividend cover, can you just speak to how you think about rail contributing to that? Obviously, over the next couple of years, both London Midland and Southeastern move towards expiry.
The 2x, I mean, as I say, it's a policy. So looking at 2x cover as a policy, and again, as you point out, you need to bear in mind changes in the franchise structure and changes in the future looking profitability of the business, and these are the things that board take on board when they're looking at how they apply that dividend policy.
Something I'd also say on top of that is that why did we embark in 2012 on our £100 million bus profit target? It was so that we could actually pay the dividend without worrying about rail franchises, and we will achieve it, and we will be in a position that we can deal with the dividend without an issue of rail franchises.
Just a further clarification. When you're talking about rebuilding the margins on GTR, do you expect that 3% margin to be an average margin over the full life of the franchise, or is it rebuilding back to 3% over the period?
I expect it to be the average. Excellent. No more hands coming up. You've really good questions. Thank you very much indeed for your attention and your interest. Great. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Cheers.